and welcome to the Royal Geek Podcast. I'm your host tonight, Justin Sandoval, aka Sandy, and I am joined by the one and only Anthony Amato, who we like to call Shamato. That's right, no T-roll. You're stuck with, I guess, are we the B-squad? No, I'm just kidding. No, Anthony
I mean,
and
I'm
Justin.
The A-squad. I mean, my first and last name start with that letter A.
You're double A all day. All right, so, sorry, T-roll, he's busy, he's out. Gallivanting around. I don't know what he's doing. We don't keep track of him.
Yep.
He just shows up when he wants to, basically. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys listening and tuning in. Please go ahead and follow us on all of our socials at Royal Geek Pod. Go ahead and subscribe wherever you're listening. Really appreciate that. And yeah, Shamato, how's it going, man?
It's going good, you know, just school year's rounding down. So, you know, just trying to coast to the end of the year and get through everything.
Yeah, that's right, man. Summer vacation will be fantastic for
you.
Good, man. I had a pretty good week. I did another guest spot on another podcast.
Yeah.
MCU Bleeding Edge.
Nice.
We were reviewing Shogun episode 8. Or no, is it 8? Yeah, we did 8. And, yeah, it was a good time. So if you guys want to check that episode out, I'll go ahead and link that in the description. Go ahead and support your boy Sandy and the Royal Geek Podcast by checking that out. And, yeah. So all that said, I say we dive in, and we're going to talk about X-Men 97, Episode 6.
So yes.
This is Life, Death, Part 2.
Yes.
So, first off, what a episode in between these two, part one and part two. Fantastic. I really enjoyed talking about it last week with you.
Yeah.
But overall thoughts of the episode this week?
I was kind of going into this episode feeling like, okay, we're going to kind of like, you know, this is just going to be a filler episode to kind of get us to a new point in the series. Because we kind of knew that this wasn't going to be a true continuation of what was like the storyline that we had just epically had the previous episode with Genosha. So I was kind of like, okay, this will be all right, you know, kind of filler episode, like kind of a little bit like, you know, hedging my expectations. But it ended up having a huge shock in it, as well as like some really cool like development with on the Storm side. So yeah. It was pretty cool seeing, you know, how this played out.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. After last week's episode, which I mean left you shocked, like
yes.
Completely shocked. Like even like when you started the episode, they did a recap and they showed bits and pieces of it, and I was just like, we're not getting this episode. Like we're gonna get the continuation of the episode before that.
Yeah.
And I stifled my expectations a little bit. Like, there's no way it can be as good as last week's. And then, what do? They shock you. First off, by starting off in, like, space, and then that
yeah.
trickles into the reveal of, spoiler warning. I forgot to mention spoilers, obviously.
Yes.
But if you're listening to this, you don't care about spoilers, because you're here already. Yeah. But, yeah, Charles Xavier, just...
apparently still alive.
Still alive. I meant to do a rewatch of like the last season of the original X-Men,
yeah.
but I never got around to it. And I was like, he like died. Like, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure everybody thought he was like gone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So who knows what happened?
Yeah, I know. So if I was smart, I would look it up and tell you about it. But instead, I'm just gonna be like, whoa,
who
that's
knows?
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He's back.
Yeah.
And not only is he back, he's in a relationship, and
yes.
it's made known that he is going to become the emperor because he's marrying her. And what was her name?
Empress Leandra.
Yes, that's right. And yeah, that was just so strange to be introduced to him again, and
yeah.
then only to be in this like such a different role.
Yeah,
it was so strange.
Yeah,
but,
and can we throw out a little shout out to our boy Ross Marquand?
Oh,
you
yeah.
You know, picking up another MCU voice credit.
Dude.
You know, like, you know, he filled that role of Red Skull so well.
Yeah.
You know, when Hugo Weaving left. You know, so that was super cool. And then, like, seeing him pick up another huge voice credit here in Charles Xavier.
Yeah.
You know, so that was super cool.
I mean, he does a dynamic job.
Yes.
And I mean, obviously his stint in Walking Dead, I can't throw that out. He was great,
great
in that too. But yeah, no, I thought Charles Xavier sounded great. Like it sounded like old Charles. Like I guess I don't know. It just had that stoicness to him, like peaceful nature, and like I don't know. It was good. It felt I got all warm and tingly inside, that kind of thing.
And then we got a nice, really cool like connection between the MCU and in bringing the Kree in, and especially with Ronan.
Yeah.
You know, you get to see Ronan the Accuser, you know, in that moment, and you get to see them fighting the Kree Empire and seeing, you know, this conflict, and you get to see kind of like maybe where this falls in line in the MCU sort of. Like, ideally. Like, not necessarily, like, a part of the MCU, but...
Right, not like, perfect.
Yeah, but. You get to see, like, okay, well, this is adjacent, and, this, like, it gives you something to measure up against, you know, in a way. Because you're seeing, you know, comparable, a same enemy as something that is in the MCU.
Right, yeah. And we see Deathbird fighting with Gladiator, right? That she was fighting with him?
Yep.
And against Ronan, and... they get a message, a holo from the sister announcing the marriage proposal. And then just a large portion of this episode is all on this off world.
Yes.
And Charles debating with himself, like, what's he willing to give up? What a part of him is he willing to put aside in order to pursue happiness? That kind of thing, right? Because it appears like the conversation that they have, like, when Charles is, like, taking his armor off because his legs don't work and he's, like, sitting down.
Yeah.
But then, like, she's removing parts of her armor as well. And then, it seems like a very genuine conversation that they're having, right? Like, it's real, it feels like. I don't know. You took it as that as well? Like,
yeah, I mean, I felt like he was, like, 95% of the way there.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, and they kind of play it out to, like, everything in his life, I think he was willing to give up except for his X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if, you know, they had been like, oh, you can still remember your X-Men, then he probably would have been like,
let's go.
Done. Done and done.
Yep.
But unfortunately for him, it just was like, it was a bridge too far. Like, he just could not, there's too much there for him to give up.
And even, was it Leandra you said?
Yes. Empress Leandra.
Yeah, Empress. She even drops a line later on in the episode saying, like, the Terrans put you through so much, even to the brink of death, and you still like can't put them away, like that kind of thing. Like you can't still can't forget your X-Men. Like that's, I mean, if you really think about it, that's saying a lot because the dude went through hell with trying to just become equals with the rest of humanity, only to have to push back every second and of every hour because he's a mutant and because he was just different.
Yes.
And so the whole storyline of like equality and like what's right and what's wrong is played out again in this episode.
Yeah.
Like even like Deathbird and Charles's viewpoints, like, I mean, there's a clear like discouragement of Charles for like, you
are a lesser being.
Yes, exactly. You're lesser. Even you're not on Earth anymore. And guess what? You're still a lesser being. Like it makes it like he can't escape it.
Well, and it's cool. It's interesting because it's like literally they're talking about, oh, they treated you like terribly on Earth, but and like, you know, why would you want to be a part of that?
Yeah.
By the way, we're also going to treat you terribly here.
Yeah.
Like it's
on like a galactic level now.
Yeah,
like,
it's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. It's like, but you know, that's how sometimes prejudice works. Is like this idea of, you know, it's okay when we do it, but it's not okay when other people do it. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just kind of plays out, and it's this ridiculousness. I do think they did a cool, like almost, like it was like a moment of like two sides of the coin in the sense of like, so you see the fall of Magneto, and then the rise of Xavier, like kind of like play back to back in a way. So it's kind of interesting seeing because he's been out of the picture for this whole entire thing, and it's not until Magneto falls that we get to see Charles Xavier again.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, Magneto falls so much so where they removed him and Gambit from the opening intro.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught that or not, but yeah, they're not there. So they're dead. Like, they're not coming back. Tyrell questioned, and Tone last week questioned, they didn't see a body of Magneto, but no, he's gone. If you remove him from the opening credits, you got to be gone, right? Like,
I mean, I don't know. I think there's still a possibility that Magneto will come back.
Once again, Cable exists. Yes. So there is a possibility. But as of right now in the timeline that they're dealing with.
Oh, I mean, I think he's like dead in timeline.
Yes.
Yes. 100%. Uh-huh. I'm 100% with you there.
Yeah.
I think he's dead in timeline. I just don't. I just don't think this is
it's not permadeath.
Kind of thing.
All right, good. We're on the same page.
Yes. but yeah, so that was it was really cool seeing like the space play out, because we don't get to see a whole lot of that in the MCU a lot, especially from you usually see it from a human perspective. You don't get to see a whole lot of these inner workings of other empires a whole lot.
Right. I mean, minus Asgard. That's Asgard, and then whatever the Grand Master's working with, right? Like Guardians.
Yeah.
That's really essentially it, right?
I mean, I guess you could consider Captain Marvel, you know, like what that kind of
is.
A little bit, it was kind of cool hearing them talk about the Supreme Intelligence.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's right.
They did bring up that, you know, in the...
That's two references there.
Yes, they did bring up that as well. I don't know, I feel like Asgard is kind of like its own, like, separate thing. It's space, but I don't know if it's like... I don't know, it just doesn't have like the same feel as like
Guardians.
Like the Kree or the Skrulls or things like that. Like those type of things where I think of them as like true like space type of stuff.
So like higher alien and the,
yeah,
the
like,
lesser
aliens. Like Adam Warlock's creators.
Yeah,
like those type of people. Those type of species. That's kind of what I think of when I think of space.
Yeah.
Like people, like in those realms, like I said, the Kree, the Skrull, things like that.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
The Chitauri, I would consider as a part of that as well. Like all that whole like realm.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because they're so humanoid. Like the Asgardians don't come off as much that way to me. But
I mean,
who knows?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But yeah, no, I did like to see in that perspective as well. You got to see a bunch of like different characters.
Yeah.
Wow, what was the? I don't remember the old dude's name, but the one who was like saying you had to go through with this memory wipe. Like he like seconded Deathbirds, saying like you gotta show us, prove us that you belong here. But anyway, no, it's not a big deal. I don't remember. He's old dude. That's all you gotta know.
Maybe Lord or a rat guy.
That sounds about right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And so, yeah, they gave him a quandary where he's like, you got to forget everything Terran.
Yeah.
And then we will accept you as the betrothed to the Empress. And so he has a lot of thought behind this. Like, you can literally tell he's, like, putting
I think he's within, like, a step.
Yeah.
Like, he's, like, legitimately, yes. I believe he's legitimately within.
Yeah, you said 95% there.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is, like... He's like, I've gone through so much, and like, why do I keep getting in my own way of happiness? That kind of thing. And he's got a point. He really does. And I mean, give the guy a break. He deserves like peace. And then he's even mentioned, like, the Empress says to him, you want to like go see them, but like I'm worried you'll get lost in their drama and you won't come back to me. That kind of thing. And he's like, well, let's relocate your empire to Terran and, like, be up over there by Earth.
Yeah.
Fulfilling, like, Deathbird's, like, see, he's trying to...
they should basically call it a slum. The Milky... I forget her exact phrase.
Yeah,
it was, like,
the
Milky
Way
slum or something like
right.
that.
Ghetto.
Ghetto. Milky Way ghetto,
yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
Which actually,
saying that to a Jew, yeah, like...
Yeah, like, that is a... Yeah, that is not the... If that was Magneto would have went...
He
would have went ape in that moment.
That's true.
You know,
Charles definitely had a lot more restraint for
yes.
sure. But
and then he does like the most Charles Xavier thing ever, and like with when they're in that battle, and then he just like
Ooh.
Uses his mind. He just straight up brings him to a classroom. Like he's just you know, turns into the old headmaster role that, you know, he plays so well.
Well, it's also a flex of his power, too.
Like, yes, it's very much so.
To be able to teleport and transport everyone's mind to the astral plane. And when the line is said, class is in session. Like, that's one of that's one of Charles's very first lines in the comic books. Like, that's, like, class is in session.
Yeah.
Like, that's who he is at heart. Like, he's literally, you know him as Professor X.
Yes.
He is meant to teach and lead. And when he gets everybody in class and they're like, what's going on? What's going on? And like, raise your hand if you want to speak. Like, and he's like disciplining them. But then he goes on and gives this like amazing like demonstration of of like, I mean, basically like discrimination and power and the abuse of power.
Yes. The only reason you're here is because you undercut other fledgling, you know, species, you know,
just even the animated chalkboard that brought that all to life too.
Yeah.
It helped a dumb guy like me, grasp the concept of what he was teaching. I was like, oh yeah, look, there you go. You're like, you undercut and you like take their knees out and then, like, their heads, and then they, like, they're killing them on their heads, but they don't let them grow. Like, I'm like, oh, I get this, dude. I get this. They're not allowing powers to rival them, so they keep people in line, like that kind of thing. And, I mean, Deathbird is the one that, lashes out the most.
Yeah.
And he, like, this is how, like, and powerful he is, because Deathbird appears pretty powerful throughout the entire episode leading up to this point. Because she throws Ronan around like he's, like, nothing. And then she's like tossing her weight around in the council room or whatever they're in, and then only to be trapped in the mind.
Yeah,
you have an apple shoved in your mouth. Like that's pretty wild.
Which is interesting because like when you think about so this race believes it's so far above people, and generally when there's a representation of a superior alien like group. Mental acuity is generally considered like one of the highest forms of like highest forms of to show the differentiation between them and these lower species.
The lessers,
and so like this whole idea of what Charles is doing is just has to be just like grinding them, because this idea of like his mental ability is literally pulling them down. And literally, so much higher than them. So it'd be like going to, like out in the woods and getting outsmarted by like you know a beaver, and you're like this being that has no, like you if anything that it could do, you would think you're like, oh, this is just a stupid animal. Essentially, that's how they see like the human race. They see Terrans, but like he is literally putting them in their place every moment in. Probably the most, for their species, emasculating way possible.
Oh, yeah. And you can definitely, like, Deathbird was definitely feeling it as well. Man, the whole classroom scene was perfect. I thought it was absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And the classroom scene ends pretty graphically, in my opinion. Like, not necessarily, like visually, but, like, Charles, like, you see the torment. You see the pain. You see him dealing with what he is uncovered. And you see Gambit standing there, like taking over the astral plane. And he goes his full skeleton. And Charles is, he knows now that he's gone. And he's like, what's like, I think he says, correct me if I'm wrong here. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong here, which I probably am. He's like, did he say, my children? Does he say, like, I feel like he says my children, or no, did he say my X-Men? I don't know. He says my something. It's like, but whatever he's, dang, I wish I really freaking knew. But whatever he says, he, like, the motion behind it is just absolutely insane. And I feel every second of it. I think the real problem is that when he said it, like, I kind of blacked out because I was like, oh my gosh, this is devastating.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
It's pretty rough. It's also really cool seeing, like, this, like, the size that they made Gambit is like this. Especially with the like the size of his sacrifice that we saw at the end of the last episode, and you're kind of seeing him as this giant in the mind of Xavier. And like, it also think it may be like a representation of his relationship with Gambit, like in the sense of like he's such a figure in his mind that's why he shows up so big, and that's why his loss is so impactful to Charles.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, come to think about it, I feel like. if any of the X-Men died, they would appear to Magneto or to Professor X as larger than life because he views them in such high regards that that's his point of view on them. They're just larger than life, that kind of thing. And then he breaks down and he's like, I have to go to them, that kind of thing. Yeah. And then boom, that side of the storyline is over, which was, it was captivating, gripping, fantastic.
Yeah.
And then we slide on over to Storm and Forge, and we see Forge lying in the bed. He's got some sort of purple.
Yeah, he's like, he's like some more like demon infection, essentially, is what it is.
And a powerless Storm, who is attempting to save him, and but all while fighting the adversary the whole entire time. Like, their adversary is trying its darndest to manipulate Storm into whatever goal or agenda she wants.
Yeah.
I mean, I take the adversary as a female, right? Like, or I mean, voiced like a female. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Probably gender neutral. Probably.
If I had to guess, it is female because of
Storm.
Because of Storm. Yeah. Yes, I would assume potentially if it was attached to another a male character, it might be male.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it kind of like fits into that.
Fluid,
like
very fluid.
Like whoever, or even like, you know, if it happened to be. You know, it could be a male with a female if that's like where it fits into their
eye of the beholder kind
like,
of thing.
Yeah, like I think it's literally just switches as but this is some necessary.
Of the, some of the best dialogue here with Storm and the adversary, like just talking about Storm and her struggles of who she is and where she finds her identity and just Forge in general, like. He was after you. He was against you. Like he had nothing to do. Like she's like literally the adversary is trying to turn Storm against him, and she's able to fight him off, or able to fight the adversary off. And then Forge, like, this caught me off guard because Forge like pops up out of nowhere, bandaged up. He wasn't bandaged up a couple minutes ago. Just point that out there.
Mm.
And then he's got a spell book and he's like binding adversary.
Yeah.
And then he like. Traps adversary, and which I'll point out this, the animation for this scene right here alone, top tier.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Just like seeing the rings that like Doctor Strange-esque wrap around the adversary and then like all the swirly, and it was beautifully animated for sure. But it caught me off guard. I was like, Forge mystical powers? But it had to do with his ancestors, apparently. Yeah. So,
anyway. I mean, they've been leaning the Marvel's been kind of leaning into like the Native American supernatural like aspect. So, I mean, this is like the third time in the last 6 months that they've dove into like Native American supernatural.
Kahori, yeah.
Yeah, Kahori. Mm-hmm. Even with Maya.
Oh, that's right.
And Echo like dives into that, and then and now this. Forge. Yeah, so I'd say, I mean, they've been relatively straightforward with like their ideas on that sense.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. You're very good. So he mentions a cactus that grows in the dark, and it's known to be healing properties. And so Storm ventures off with him in tow, and. I don't remember, like, I know Storm had, there was a few episodes in the past with her in small spaces, but, like, is that a comic book thing where she's, like, claustrophobic? I don't remember.
I don't know specifically, what that leads to, or why she...
Because I'm a little bit claustrophobic, too, so, like, those scenes really hit me. Like, I was like, oof, I know what she's going through, like, that stuff's...
And those scenes kind of reminded me of, like, the scene on, where, when Luke from... and Luke in Star Wars goes through his test. It kind of reminded me of sort of like that idea of them going into a cave facing. And it kind of plays out that way because like she kind of comes to the point to the realization and that the adversary is really just the other side of herself.
Yeah.
And it's like it's her own fears. It's her own.
Yeah. Well, when they like adversary brings up Jean and how she Storm told Jean that. She sometimes wants to understand what it's like to be on the other side of things. And, like, Storm really wrestled with that because she was like, I mean, yeah, I did say that, but like, I want to know, I want to be who I am. Like, I want to be me. I don't know why I said that. That kind of thing. Like, she's battling with, yeah. Why did she say it in the first place? Is that how I really feel? And then the adversary was like, that is how you really feel, like trying to point her in that direction.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just, we've all been there. Like, I don't know. I'm speaking for myself. I'm sure. Yeah. I don't know if you can relate or not, but like we've all said something or have done something that was a little bit off character. Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I don't know why I did that or why I said that. And you're like, but is that what I really am? That kind of thing. Like, I don't know.
There's always moments where like you doubt like who you even are. Like, you know, there's, you know, like, am I who I am? Like, you know, am I just being who other people want me to be? Correct. All that kind of stuff, you know?
Dude, yeah. It's so good. These storylines are great. Like, the writing is good. Like, I mean, you should know. You're our resident writer here. Like, this is some top quality writing here. And the fact that they're able to tackle these like, social issues and emotional issues and, like, make it relatable and to the fans. And like, I've seen a lot of like reactions to the episode and it's hitting a lot of people like in the feels for sure. Yeah. Because these are things that we're really dealing with. And I love how like the biggest takeaway from just the X-Men series overall is not about, like they're not focusing on like race or they're not focusing on, like gender or stuff like that, like the outside reaction. They're focusing on like the X-Men is shedding light on humanity as a whole and how there is a distinct like equality that we rightfully deserve. Like, and it's not based solely on one thing. Like it's not solely on race. It's like you as a human being and me as a human being. Like, that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting that other people also are getting as well. Yeah. I don't know. It's just refreshing to see that we're not divided on these different like topics that we are faced with today and now times. And X-Men's kind of like bringing that together as just like one whole of figuring out unity, that kind of thing. I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
Yep.
But we see Stormkinder powers back.
Yes.
Which she becomes empowered by finding out who she is, and then she does this like really sick costume change, hair growth, and blasts off into flies all over.
Very
the place.
Superman-esque, like moment where she has,
and we get our Omega level threat back. Like,
yes,
we lose one in Magneto, and we gain it back in Storm an episode later. So, thank goodness, because I have a feeling they're going to need it. With what happens at the end of the episode, but I will say before we get there, Storm, she gets Forge the healing cactus, which works immediately. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes,
or not.
It was like, basically instantaneous.
Yeah, I was like, what the heck? Like, I want some of that stuff. Like, very convenient. But they do talk about their love for each other, which is it came full circle, which is great. That's the comic book connection right there. And then they turn on the news. Like, they were having a conversation, and then he just turns on the TV. Like, I feel like when he turned on the TV, I feel like they were still in the middle of their conversation. Like, I don't know. The typical like 90s dad, like talking to like the wife's talking over there, and the dad just turns on the TV. Like, that's what I felt like. I don't know. I knew it was a good turning point for turning on the TV. And then what do they see? The Genosha event, and Storm reacts appropriately for sure. She's like devastated.
Yeah, she's broken.
Yeah, exactly. And so that leads to I'm led to believe that she is going to have a come together moment, and like she's going to everybody. Like, she's gonna find out what's going on. Charles is gonna be on the way. We're getting the band back together, that kind of thing, right?
Yes.
Which essentially, minus Gambit, sorry. They are getting the band together. And that's where we leave that storyline. Only to have the last couple minutes of the episode set up the big bad. Like, what? I don't know what the plot line is for the big bad yet, because there's something like, okay, so we see Trask, right?
Yes.
And he's... Wow, what is he saying? He's yelling and running.
Basically, he's saying that I gave you my DNA so that you could you know, basically do the Sentinel program.
Okay.
And make the Sentinel program part of you.
Yeah.
And basically that's all it really was. And that's what it felt like is okay. like really what was happening.
Yeah. And then just the way that this is like animated where he's on the ground on his knees and like you don't see Mr. Sinister, but you see like the his shoulder like half capes or whatever yeah. the heck they are, like quarter capes. You see them, and I'm still like, yeah, Tone was right. Like, Sinister is the big bad of the whole entire series, which, I mean, I was like, yeah, you're right. He's kind of going to be, but I kind of wanted somebody else, too. Like, and you mentioned last week Trask. You yeah. You thought Trask was still there. Sounds like Trask is going to be, like, a throwaway or, like, used and abused by
yeah,
Sinister.
Yeah, it sounds like he's going to be, like, a second.
Yeah, a second-tier villain, right?
Yeah.
He's Toby Jones, basically. That's what he's going to be yep. for Captain America.
Which, I mean, in a way, he makes sense in that. Role because yeah. of the fact that he doesn't have the physical abilities correct, to match yeah. up and he's just kind of like the side piece to like get
right, yeah.
like the Sentinel program up for Mr. Sinister yeah. and which just makes Mr. Sinister just like even another level of insane
and so Mr. Sinister is revealed at the end there and then everything fades out to black. You don't see anything else.
Yep.
And that's the episode. So yeah, what do you think is going to happen going forward here?
I think the next episode is going to be essentially, I think it's going to have something to do with Cable. Like I think,
okay.
like I was kind of saying, I feel like this episode is going to be kind of maybe we're going to see at least the first half of the episode be like Cable and him growing up on in the future with Bishop. And then maybe finding a way to maybe halfway through we get that scene from Genosha mm. where he's almost got there, and then the last half of the episode will be him getting that last step to get the closer to get us to where we need to be, like
yeah.
to actually rectify what was happening so that they can have this final like setup of like three episodes where they're really going to be or the final showdown, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, yeah. No, I think you are right. As far as this episode is going to be one that like kind of leads to the something bigger, and I do know for a fact that after the next episode, it is a part one, part two, part
yes.
three to end the season.
Yes.
And so for me, what that tells me is that this next episode is going to set a lot of the pieces. And so I have mixed feelings about episodes like that. I really like episodes that set pieces, but it's got to be executed.
Yeah.
It has to be executed, because if you are setting pieces to then not follow through with them, it's like,
yeah.
We all know those shows that have those episode 7 or episode 8 that just like give you a bunch of questions and then never give you the answer to that. Like,
yeah.
I feel like as long as this episode is laying the breadcrumbs for yep. the next three episodes, then I'm good.
Yeah. Like, it's like when you it'd be like going to those internet videos where like somebody sets up a whole bunch of dominoes.
Yeah.
But at the end, instead of knocking them over, they just end the video and you're like, you feel unsatisfied. Like, you don't get to see, like, yeah. they're like, this is going to be so cool, and then they just don't actually show you.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how it is sometimes with those episodes. But I think we're going to get, you know, a pretty good setup for, like, a solid, like, I mean, if you're doing a three-episode finale, yeah. essentially, like, you should be able to lay down, like, what you
right.
need to do.
Correct,
you know?
Yes. And you got to think we're getting a Charles, a Storm, and like the original gang back together. Like,
yeah.
Whether it's at the end of the next episode, I don't think it's going to happen right away. I don't think that. I think Cyclops is going to take whatever team that he has and try to figure out where the Sentinels came from. So probably hunt down Trask is what I'm assuming. Because as of right now, all they know is that Sentinels killed a bunch of people in Genosha. And
yes.
so they are going to find Trask and figure
yeah.
out.
Trask is yeah. like, yeah,
but
he's point A.
Right, exactly. And so like while they're off doing that, I feel like is where Storm and Charles might meet up at the mansion, and they might get a moment first, and then everybody else will join them
yeah.
On the way back home, that kind of thing. I don't know. I am excited. I know I was a little poo-poo on episode 4, but 5 and 6, they really came to play.
They've been really good episodes. I do think like I would like to hear a potential like reasoning as to why they essentially decided to split Life Death into two parts, into two episodes, mm-hmm. when it wasn't like the reason that I was like, okay, so I see Life Death 2, okay. I get what maybe they just wrote an episode that was like they had a storyline that they were like, you know, it's gonna be like an episode and a half. How are you gonna fix that? Mm-hmm. Well, then we're gonna throw on this side episode about Jubilee. But the thing is, that wasn't even that, because they were technically there was the first half of the episode had nothing to do with Storm either. So why couldn't you just like why didn't you do Life Death as one episode mm-hmm. and then do the whole episode with Jubilee and then the episode with Charles, mm-hmm. If you were going to split an episode, yeah. like why wouldn't you do that instead? So that was my one like nitpicky part of it.
So when we've got Life Death Part 1, it was the last half of the Motendo, right? Mm-hmm. What would you have named the Charles portion of this episode if you had to do blank episode / Life Death Part 2? What would you have named this episode?
Let's see. Let me see.
Tough. I put the writer on the spot, and he's like writing. He's doing. He's probably on his third draft right now in his head.
Something like that. let's see. I'm not sure what I would call it.
It's tough, right?
Yeah. It's a little hard to
get, I don't know. What came to mind for me, was like.
Oh, you know what would have been a good one?
Yeah.
It would have been kind of it would have been kind of douchey.
On the nose? Oh, okay.
It would have been a little douchey.
Okay.
But Back from the Grave.
A little too morbid, I think. I don't think it fit the tone of the episode.
But see, okay, so the reason why I say that is because it gives hope to what happened in the previous episode as well. Because you're like, oh, well, maybe that means Magneto and Gambit are coming back.
That is Charles. Yeah.
You know, but it's actually... You know, another character that you really wanted to come back from the grave, but you weren't expecting to come back from grave.
Nice. I was thinking something more along the lines of like Love is a Galaxy Away or something like that.
Yeah.
Like something along those lines. I don't know. Galactic Heart.
Yeah.
There you go. I don't know. But yeah, I just thought it was an interesting tidbit there. Because it's true. It did feel like a two-part episode still.
Yes.
Like Life Death Part 2 was essentially the same length of a full episode with Part 1 combined. Like,
yes.
So, it didn't make any sense. So.
Yeah, no. That was my nitpick
of
the setup. I was like, I mean...
Do another episode. Just do an episode.
Yes.
So, all right. Anything else? You good?
I do want to throw out, I think Madeline Pryor is going to die.
Okay.
I think she's going to die sort of as a
as long as
martyr.
Okay.
In the sense of, I think it's going to be in... Because of her connection with Mr. Sinister, and because in some way she's going to do it protecting Cable.
Okay, I mean I don't want to hear that because I mean I like her so far. But if she does die, as long as I get one more Goblin Queen costume, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
All right. So I can die happy man.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we'll see.
It would also like it would be kind of morbid, but it would kind of seal the. Rift in the relationship a little bit between
because there was definitely some rift
between Scott and Jean Grey, and it would kind of get them back kind of on their path.
True,
hopefully,
but that would also make the fans on the side of wanting Logan and Jean to get together.
But it would strengthen that because it would create that it would make that love triangle even more like visceral.
That's
because
true.
If there's a secondary option, then that's too easy. You know, that's too easy of a solution if it's just like, you take your clone, I'll take my real thing, and then that's too easy.
That's a fantastic point. Yeah, you're right. Okay, well, then never mind. Good. Anything else? You good?
No, I think I'm good.
All righty. Once again, we really appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening and checking us out. Follow us on all of our socials at Royal Geek Pod. Subscribe and follow wherever you listen. And for Shimato and myself, Sandy, we will see you next time, you peasants.